loud.
I love when you sing.
I love when, first of all, I have to say, music is like, without music, it would be such a sad world.
Oh, totally.
But Bob, you and Bob have such a knack for picking like the exact song I need to hear at the moment. Feeling better now that we're through. I mean, come on. Starting off with Linda Ronstadt and finishing with... Mad Goldust Woman, my day is made. I'm telling you,
you're just so enthusiastic.
There's a lot to be enthusiastic for.
Yes, there is. And you know what? One thing that I'm doing is I've been talking a little bit about writing this book, and it's really fascinating for me because it's not easy. You know, I kind of figured it would be easier than it is. And so just to like give a quick little synopsis of what I'm doing, I'm attempting. Well, my book is going to be my relationships with men, how my negative or positive body and self-image, but mostly negative, affected my views on love. And then it's also coming from a Gen X perspective with Gen X references and also the body image thing with Hollywood because I was an actress and everything. So I've been writing and it's been a little difficult, partly because even though I know what I want to say, I'm not sure how I want to say it and how I'm going to tie it all in. But one of the things that I'm, you know, focusing on are cringeworthy moments of times when I behaved in such a way that I cringe. And I write that in the book. It's like I keep having to write in parentheses, cringe, cringe, cringe. And I mean, there was even just one story from when I was five. I was 5 years old. And there was this boy in my nursery school class, Jeffrey Groton. And he was like the stud of nursery school. And all the girls loved him. I don't know why. We all loved him. And there would be like a fight at story time because everybody had to go in the girls' room and, you know, go to the bathroom and then like you wash your hands. So it was like always this frenzy. Who could get into the girls' room first so we could be the first ones out and sit next to Jeffrey on the, you know, on the rope rug while we were listening to said story. So the thing that made me cringe was that every, you know, my nursery school had cots because we take naps. And so each of us had our own cot. So at nap time, they would lay out all the cots and all the girls refused to take a nap until they kissed Jeffrey. So we would all stand in line to kiss him. And
oh my God.
He
yes,
wouldn't
of course.
Kiss any of us unless Eunice, the little Asian girl with pretty black hair, kissed him first. And I was so pissed because Eunice didn't care. She didn't really like him. She wasn't one of the one of Jeffrey's groupies. And I remember like standing in line to kiss him, getting really mad at her, thinking, first of all, why doesn't he like me? Why does he like Eunice? And why won't Eunice just kiss him so I can kiss him? It's like, oh my God, this is 5 years old. Where did this come from? Clearly, this was just some kind of a competitive thing that the little girls in my class were going through. It was certainly not genuine feelings for Jeffrey Groton. You know, I mean, I don't even...
Yeah.
He was just some five-year-old boy that we all decided
but
was
isn't it,
a boy god.
Yeah. Yeah, a boy god, and we're gonna we're gonna pit ourselves against each other because
yes.
It's just natural for us to do so because we're five.
5 years old. I just, you know, it's like, oh my God. And then the other thing, and I completely forgot this. And yes, I am giving away some tidbits of my book, but that's okay. I don't have any idea how long it's gonna take me to write this. But there is the very significant relationship that I experienced when I was 25. This guy was such a big deal to me, and I obsessed over him. Our relationship lasted a year, not quite a year and a half, although the majority of the relationship was him living in another country. So I met him just before he had to move to this other country for work, and I was determined to make this thing work, and then eventually, of course, it didn't work out. But for 8 years, I obsessed over him. 8 long years. But I was writing about when I met him, and I remembered, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, but it's funny. It was the first date, And so, you know, like we had met and I was just all crazy in love with him. I thought I was going to marry him and all this stuff. So we set up our first date and we meet on Melrose, this really great restaurant, and have this nice dinner. And then we decide that we're going to go listen to live music afterwards, which was a great idea because all of a sudden I got terrible gas. And,
oh, dear Lord.
It was terrible.
Oh, God, but, I love you even more right now.
But the loud music thankfully helped because I just had to let it rip. And I was just sitting there.
But what about the smell?
Thankfully, there was no smell.
Oh, come on.
No, there was no smell. It was just, something happened and God graced me.
You were just full of air.
I was full of air and I was sitting there talking to him and we had to like scream talk to each other because the music was so loud. And I'm just going and going and going. He had no idea. So it's like in my mind, I'm laughing, thinking, oh my God, here I am with this man who I'm just totally in love with and really more infatuated with. But at the time,
and
I thought I was in love.
Blowing and I'm just freaking
farting,
heat.
Farting everywhere. it was pretty funny.
I love it. So
oh my
very
God.
Much.
But, you know, and I'll share this last thing. I don't know if you have any cringeworthy things, but.
How many hours do you have for me?
One of the other cringeworthy stories that I have is that when I was 15, I was just in love with this guy. And his name was Don Ray. This is his real name. But his name was Don Ray. And he was just the cutest thing I'd ever seen in my whole life. I loved him so much. And I was a virgin. And I think even at that point, I don't even believe I had French kissed anybody. I might have. I did French kiss guy. The first French kiss was almost 16 years old. So I was pretty old, I guess, for a kiss. But so when I liked Don Ray, I was such an innocent. But I was just obsessed with him and so in love with him. And so there was a mutual friend that we had that had a three-way line. So there was Bo, which had the three-way line, and then Don Ray. And then my girlfriend Mickey and I were in the same house. So she had one line and I had another. So we're all four on the phone. And I can't remember how it all came out, but I was obviously acting like some dumbass for Don. And he told me to tell him that I would fuck him. He said, say, I will fuck you. And I wanted something. I wanted him to go somewhere and meet us or something like that. So in order for, you know, for him to say that he would, he said, say, you'll fuck me. So I said,
nice.
I said, I will fuck you. And my girlfriend, Mickey, went, Kim. I mean, she was clearly like disgusted with me. And then I immediately felt embarrassed. And of course, I really wasn't going to fuck him. I just said it because I was like this desperate little 15-year-old girl who so much I wanted a boyfriend. I hadn't had one.
Well, you felt like you had to.
Yeah. And you know, I was watching all my, you know, a little backstory was that all my girlfriends, you know, when, you know, how old are you when you first start liking boys? 12, 13, 14, whatever. You know, I would see my classmates holding hands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, five. Holding hands with each other. I never had that. I was always taller than everybody else. I boys didn't like me. So I always felt as if I was the unlucky one when it came to that kind of a thing.
So you felt like you had to say that.
Yeah. I felt like if I said that, then okay, then he was going to either like me or show up and then I could make him like me or something like that. And it's like, and even though I was dumb in 15, I still cringe every time I think about it because it's like, oh God, yeah. I cringe for how pathetic
God.
I was. It's like,
yeah,
if I could just go back and talk to myself.
Moments, yeah. Well, we don't know. That's how we learn. You know,
yeah,
that's how we learn. And how does the mom or the dad of a 15-year-old girl sit down and go, hey, by the way, if you're ever in a situation where you're feeling pressure from a boy because he says he'll only meet you at the park because you have because you said that you would fuck him, here's how you act in that situation. You
yeah,
know,
right.
It's I'm sure Ann Werner was a fucking stellar example for, like, you know, strength and self-respect, but how does she impart that on you when you're just party lining it up with a guy you like?
Exactly. And she was a single mom and she wasn't always home. She was at work. And so here I was after school, you know, alone on the phone with my girlfriends or even at night, you know, like we'd talk on the phone at night and I'd be in my bedroom. She didn't hear everything. And of course I didn't tell her everything.
No.
I was extremely honest with her and I told her most everything, but I didn't tell her everything. And, you know, I mean, she was kind of busy doing her thing. She was doing her job. And I mean, at the time, you know, I mean, she's 21 years older than me. So she was in her 30s and she was having fun. And it's not to say that she wasn't paying attention to what I was doing, but, you know, she was not the stay-at-home mom who was always in my business. She sadly mm-hmm. trusted me a little bit too much. You know, I think that my mom in school was a straight-A student. She's literally the kind of person, she's a perfectionist. So, like, she used to work at this, she was a wine consultant, and she would go to work and you know, she'd have all her stuff out on her desk. And at the end of the day, she cleared up her desk and it was totally empty. And it's just because she's a neat freak. And people literally thought she quit because it was like, what happened to Anne? It's like, she's just neat. She just put everything away. And it's like, so I was not at all like that. I've never been the perfectionist. I was never the A-plus student. She kind of just always assumed that I was going to have that natural motivation that she had. Or she was actually, it was natural motivation, but she also was schooled by nuns. And you don't mess with the nuns. Yeah. You know, you don't want to piss off the nuns. I'm sure I would have been a better student if I had, you know, nuns standing over me, staring at me and afraid to piss them off. I was always a good student when I had a teacher that I either feared and or respected. And unfortunately, in the California school system, the public school system, there weren't enough of those. But, you know, I mean, I was just, I think I was a typical kid and I got away with certain shit. And I knew that because my mother, you know, was working and she worked in the car business, which meant oftentimes she wouldn't come home until after 9 o'clock. And I had the apartment where we were living to myself and I could bring my friends over or boys or whatever I wanted to do. And so, you know, yeah, I got away with stuff. So I didn't always admit to her, especially the embarrassing things like telling some boy that I would fuck them. You know, if I told her that, I can't even imagine what she would have said to me. She would have been cool, but I think she would have just thought, oh my God.
Honey, we need to have a talk.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's just, it's kind of funny to relive some of these experiences, because of course I'm starting to remember things that I had forgotten. And the other thing that I'm going to bring up is that, and talk about in my book, is one of the things that I did as I was obsessing through my youth and my desire to be in a relationship, because once again, here's the deal on me. My first quote, committed relationship was when I was turning 18. It lasted for 9 months. He was legitimately my boyfriend. He wanted to be my boyfriend, and he said that. He did cheat on me twice. That's why I say quote. But we were a couple. We were together. And then we broke up, and that was it. I didn't have another committed relationship again until I was 47 years old. So I really felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt like nobody's gonna, you know, I mean, there were men that were interested in me. I was just not interested in them, but I felt that I was unlovable. So one of the things that I, you know, and then I met this guy that had to move to another country and I became obsessed with him. And then that didn't work out. And so I remained obsessed with him. So a girlfriend of mine once said something like, you know, I went to the psychic and she was really great. So I want to go. So my mom and I drove to Simi Valley and we went to go see the psychic woman who was really just totally full of shit. And she told me that there was going to be some doll. I was going to become a famous actress, which never happened. And that there was going to be a doll after me and all this shit, whatever. So I pretty much knew she was full of shit at the time and I never went back. But then in 1998, I met another girl who told me she knew a psychic. And so I wanted in. I want to talk to the psychic, and it was about this guy. And this woman was actually pretty good. I learned a lot from, you know, I became kind of obsessed with calling psychics because I was looking for answers and I was unhappy with my own life. And I kind of got this, like a fix when I would call a psychic. And I found that, aside from the fact that I don't call them anymore, and I'm not going to diss them, I think a lot of them are bullshit. And I think that a lot of psychics, let me take that back. I think we're all psychic to a degree. And I think that some people can call on it easier than others. And I've had many experiences with a variety of different psychics who have told me things that have come to pass that they couldn't have known about in any way. They gave me names, they gave me very specifics, and it was stuff that happened way in advance. So I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. But you can't call them too often, as I would when I was younger and wanted that fix, because I wanted to hear that you're going to... And the thing about me was that if they told me that I was going to meet a guy, I would be like, yeah, right, I'm never going to meet a guy. I wouldn't believe them. And if they told me you're not going to meet a guy, then of course I would get all upset and believe them. So, I was just kind of like in this cycle of feeling sorry for myself. And the psychics just kind of helped me at the moment quiet down. It was like smoking a cigarette or something. You know, it's like it quieted me down for a few minutes. But I'm going to write in my book, you know, how I would do that. But in the end, I think in the bigger picture of calling the psychics, what it helped me realize is that there is more to life than meets the eye. And that I've kind of come to my own theories and analogies about why we're here. I'm not saying I know anything. It's just theories. But based on what I've learned from some of these people who I've spoken with who have blown me away at times with their, saying this is going to happen and then it did. It's like, wow, I really do. I had a psychic premonition that I was going to meet this particular guy. And it was in the backseat of my grandmother's car 3 weeks to the day. She gave me a ring and I put it on my finger. And as soon as I put it on my finger, like I just had this overwhelming knowledge, I'm going to meet somebody. It just hit me. It wasn't a thought. It was just this boom, there it was. And then I promptly forgot it. And then I met him 3 weeks to the day. And there was this whole like thing going around it was a Saturday that I put the ring on my finger, and on 3 weeks later on Friday, I wanted to go to this particular bar, but then I couldn't because I didn't have my driver's license, but then I found it on Saturday. So it was just funny how it seemed very coincidental. Everything just seemed coincidental. Like if I would have gone Friday, I never would have met him. And obviously I didn't marry him and all of that, but he was very significant. I felt him coming. And, so I think that, you know, talking to psychics has helped me kind of just opened myself up to the universe and all of the possibilities, and to not completely dismiss anything, to say that even though I'm not religious, I don't, you know, there are certain things about religion that I dismiss. There are certain things about psychics that I dismiss. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's possible. I think there are a lot of possibilities. Right. And so the one benefit that I got from talking to psychics, which I don't think that there were a lot of benefits. Mostly they just took my money.
That's funny, but I wasn't expecting that one.
But it's like, I think that, you know, I kind of was able to, you know, just form my own opinions about life, you know, and why we're all here. So there's that.
Interesting. And you know what, if I were to give you my take on, you know, how I form my opinions on life. I grew up very, in I would say, I don't want to say a very religious family, but I had a devout Catholic for a father. I did my Holy Communion. I baptized, Holy Communion, confirmation. Haven't taken the marriage sacrament in the church because I decided to go my own way and make it what I want. Mm-hmm. But a lot of my opinions on how the world worked, the early years were formed based on what, you know, religious beliefs and what I learned in church and what my parents, you know, I'm Italian and Mexican, for God's sake. I mean, what do you think that's a double barrel freaking shotgun right there.
Well, just let me just interject with this real quick thing. That one first psychic I told you, not the one who told me there would be a doll, but the second one that I called, she was religious. And I thought that was kind of interesting. She was a Catholic. So I thought that was kind of interesting because Catholics supposedly don't believe in that.
No. And so one time when I was I lived in Philadelphia and I was on my own, I went out there for a guy and of course it didn't work out. And I stayed because damn it, I'm not coming home. and so it's like middle of a snowstorm. And I literally, I learned how to be on my own. a lot of habits were still very tough to break, like feeling like the only way I was ever valid is if I was in a relationship,
yeah.
regardless of how meaningful it was. If there was somebody that wanted to date me, I was cool, right? I'm okay.
Right.
But at this time, I learned I didn't... have any meaningful relationships after that, other than friendships that I developed out there. So middle of a snowstorm, I would go and get my nails done like almost every week, because what else am I going to do? I don't have any friends and I, you know, whatever. So I'd walk down to this really cool teeny little hole in the wall, and it was run by this Russian woman named Nella Bachman. I don't know if I can say both names, but I just did anyway. I'm in there and I loved Nella, and she would, you know, we just chat, and it was warm in her little place, and I'd get the nails done. And one time, I'm sitting there, and Nella's giving me a little hand massage, and she goes, you know, I'm a clairvoyant. And I'm like, whoa. and I immediately went to Steve Martin, be obsequious, purple, and clairvoyant. You know, and I'm thinking, where are we going with this, Nella? And she goes, I don't normally do this. She goes, I have people to my home, and they pay me to do this, but I am getting such a strong sense right now. And I go, what do you mean? She goes, it's about your dad. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Cause my dad had died and he had been gone for almost 10 years at this point. And I'm like, bring it.
Yeah.
And she goes, may I? And I said, oh God, please. Yes. And she held my hand and was, you know, touching different parts of my hand at the time. And I was just like riveted. She said so much about my dad that only a person that knew my dad even knew my family very intimately and knew the relationship my mother and father had intimately. Mm-hmm. She went down a path. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa. Yeah. I mean, it was so dead on, to the point where she said, and your father has a message for your mother. And I'm like, holy shit, Nella. And it was so like on the money. I couldn't believe it. She said this thing. My dad was only 53 when he passed away, and he had cancer, and it was really quick, and it was a real surprise that he had it. And then from the time he was diagnosed to the time he passed was only 3.5 months. Yeah. So we had a little bit of time to prepare. We all definitely got to say goodbye to him, but it was, you know, he was really ripped from our lives, essentially. You know, my mom was a 48-year-old widow. Yeah. My brother and I were adults, but it was pretty, it rocked us all. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when my dad and mom were married, and I want to say they worked hard at it, but they were very happily married, mm-hmm. and had been together for many, many years. I was 28 when my father passed. And they were married not quite a year before that. So, you know, here they were. The kids in my life growing up and in my brother's life growing up, they came to our house and they loved my parents. And my dad was, he was a phenomenal listener. He was a very, his morals were just, he was so, so sincere and always gave the best advice and was such a man of like integrity. And, you know, here comes a guy who, born in the 40s, brown in a very white world, he had a real sense of right and wrong and how you treat people with integrity and decency and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so the kids in our lives, as we became adults, they always sort of sought him out because he was such a phenomenal listener and such a great advice giver. And for many of the kids who came from families where the parents were divorced, they came to my mom and dad a lot for guidance for many years. So when my dad died, a lot of people freaked out, you know, because he had meant so much to them and they had meant so much to him. And that was very evident, right? Mm-hmm. So one thing Nella Bachman told me when she was holding my hand, after she had already blown my fucking mind to smithereens over so many other things, she said, she goes, I want you to, because I'm crying, right? Mm-hmm. She goes, you need to know that your father has a very specific role in the afterlife. And as a Catholic person, I just, you know, heaven was one of those things, you know, mm-hmm. whether you want to call it heaven or the afterlife or what do you do afterwards? She said, your dad is sort of like an ambassador for and a guidance counselor, so to speak, for young people who die very tragically and very abruptly. And he helps guide them through the next steps, right? Hmm. The afterlife, whatever you want to call it. And I was like, you mean, so like, you know, when my dear friend Chris died abruptly at 24 in a car accident, like even though he died before my dad, dad would be there to say, hey, all right, hey, Chris, here's where we're here in this together, and I'm going to kind of show you the ropes. And she goes, exactly. Wow. And I'm like, that has given me so much peace mm-hmm. over the years, knowing that, of course, and everybody I've told has said the same thing. Of course, that's your dad's role. Mm-hmm. And when one of my best friends was and I'm sorry, you got me on, and I'm like, that's got okay. tears in my eyes right now. Aww. But this is real. And I swear to God, it has given me peace over the years. And one of my best friends went into labor with her second baby, and she had recently lost her grandparents kind of close, you know, one by one. And she called me, and she was in the hospital, you know, right after the birth of her second kid. She goes, Steph, you need to hear this. And I don't know how I'm going to tell you, but your dad came and told me it's time. He came to me in a dream, and she described his outfit. He had like a Madras short sleeved collared shirt on and some khakis pulled up way too high. And there he was. And he goes, listen, the angel is coming. And she said, I looked very clearly at Joe Dominguez, and standing behind him were Nani and Nano, her grandparents. And she woke up. She was like, okay, the angel's coming. And she was in labor. And she was like sobbing, telling me this. And I'm like, see, he's there. And I believe in that shit. Did I go way off on a tangent? Did I just creep you out too hard?
No. I love this stuff. The thing that I don't love is people who just dismiss it and say it's bullshit, because it's not bullshit. I think that there are bullshit psychics, you know, mm-hmm. and I think that there are people who swindle you. Mm-hmm. But I've had too many. I even had myself. I had a friend that I actually met online. I met him on Facebook, and it was weird because I met him in person, and then that, I think it was like the night or a couple of nights after I met him, I dreamed, or I should say in my dream, his mother who died came to me. And she started telling me things. I've never had anything like this. I've never had an experience like this in my life. So she started telling me all these things. And, you know, he told me about his mother, and his family was devastated at her death. And she had died, I think, 6 years earlier. I think it was to the fucking day. I think it was like 6 days, 6 years to the day that she died. She appeared in my dream and told me some things. And they were, like you said, very specific things. I didn't know anything. I didn't know him very well. But I just, you know, she said A, B, C, and D. And I was like afraid to go to him with this because there were messages to him. And I thought he's going to think I'm a fucking lunatic. You know, but then I thought, you know what? Who cares? I'm just going to let him know, hey, I had this dream and this happened. Take it for what it's worth. So I sent him an email, and he responded and said that he was reading the email with tears streaming down his face, that these were private things that his mother had said to him and him only. And, which I kind of knew because of what she said, but it blew his mind because, and then she came to me a couple of times in dreams and had messages for me to send to the family. And what was really creepy was she told me, to tell him that his dad needed to go to the doctor because there was some kind of a problem. And she, and I think she said it was, I can't remember it now. I wrote it down in my diary somewhere, so I'm gonna have to look it up, but it had something to do with his brain. And I think he ultimately died of brain cancer. So, I did tell him that I had that dream, and it upset him a lot. I didn't, I just said that your mom is saying that your dad needs to go to the doctor. And, he asked me to not share that anymore, like share anything like that, because it was too upsetting for him. But then sure enough, not too long after, it came out that he had brain cancer. So, or some kind of issue with his brain. So I think that, you know, I mean, like there, the one psychic that I told you about who was Catholic, she, sometimes she was fucking right on. she was just right on. And that was always when A, I hadn't talked to her for a long time, and B, I would just say, all right, tell me what you see. I didn't tell her anything that was going on with my life. She didn't have any idea what was going on. I just wanted to see what would come to her without me saying a word. And that's when she would be the most accurate. If I called her too often and she became aware of what was going on in my life, more than anything, I would get advice from her, which was not what I was interested in. I didn't give a shit about her advice. I wanted just to see what she would say psychically. And so there were, you know, several occasions, not a whole lot, but several occasions where she would be right. But I could always tell when she wasn't feeling it, because she would always use the same kind of language. She would say things like murky colors, or she would bring up colors a lot. Oh, I'm getting green, which is supposed to mean positive. Oh, I'm getting murky colors, which is supposed to mean negative. Anytime she would pull that crap, I knew she wasn't seeing anything. And she was just, it was like, I called it psychic filler to justify whatever she was charging. But, you know, there, and again, I knew this while I was calling her. And when I did call her or anybody else, it was, again, I was feeling there was something missing in my life. And I wanted answers. And if I called somebody, I had hope, because we would schedule the, you know, can I call you at 2 o'clock or tomorrow at 2 o'clock? So until 2 o'clock, I would be hopeful. Maybe I'm going to hear something I want to hear, and it would give me something to focus on. Instead of focusing on whatever obsessive, you know, obsession I was going on for the guy that I was, you know, crazy about at that moment, or whatever it was, whether it was a job or something like that. Mostly it was a guy. But they gave me my fix, and I'd calm down until like whenever. And then the next week I would be like, I have to call in, and, you know, am I going to meet the love of my life? Is this the guy, the love of my life, or whatever? But there were enough instances in my, you know, another thing, I met this girl who actually wound up on some television show. She was on some television show where it was like competing psychics. And she was pretty good. She told me, both of my grandmothers, when and how they were going to die. And she was absolutely right. And the other thing that she told me was that the one grandmother, my father's mother, was going to die. I think she gave me the year. And then she said, she's going to come back and visit you as a bird. And so I remember my grandmother had cancer, and I was with her before she died. And I said to her, you know, if it's possible, when you do die, can you visit me? You know, I'm open to it. So if you could let me know you're there, I'd really appreciate it. And I truly believe there was a series of events that happened. I asked both of my grandmothers to do this. I don't know that I got that confirmation from my mother's mother. There was one little thing that happened, but I can't be sure. But with my father's mother, there were so many things. And it was so funny, because the bird thing became a big deal. There were bird things happening all over the place. One of the things that happened, and this is gonna make me sound like such a nut, but I don't care, because it blew my mind. I had like an air conditioner that, you know, fit in the window, a window air conditioner, and every now and then a bird would land on it. So, and they were always doves. So the doves would land on it, and if I walked up to the window, they would fly away. But I wanted to look at them because they were pretty, and I would throw little pieces of bread out on it so that they would, you know, land. So eventually the birds stopped coming. I stopped throwing pieces of bread on my air conditioner. And I don't know, for the longest time, no birds came. And then my grandmother died, and boom, there was a dove. So I thought, And, you know, I went over to the window, and the bird didn't fly away. And it was right at the very end of the air conditioner. And I just looked at the bird, knowing how ridiculous I sounded. I said, if you're my Grammy, come right up to the window and look at me. And I swear to God, the bird just looked right in my eye and walked right toward me and stood and was just staring at me. And I was, and it was like, whoa, you know, I thought, I think that might be my Grammy, you know, and was it her? I don't know, but it's nice to think. It's nice to feel like, you're getting these signs. And there were other signs having to do with birds. And it was just, it was for a while, it ended. But it was probably about 5 different things that happened. And it just gave me a feeling of peace. And I like to say that regardless of whether that was just pure coincidence and it was just some friendly bird, It, like I said, it made me feel good, and it gave me a hopeful feeling. So I don't sit here and try to push this down anybody's throat or say, you have to believe this one thing. I just say, don't discount things, because we don't know anything. The only thing that we do know is that we don't know much. You know, we're human beings. We're all trying to figure this out. We're trying to figure out why we're here and what's important in life. And we learn and we have theories. And I think everything, we're open to everything. We don't have to buy into everything. But I think it's good to just leave the door open.
And yep,
leave it open. There's a possibility. You never know, right? It could be. Mm-hmm. But that said, I guess we should wrap up because... It is getting late. We're just talking and talking and talking. I wonder if anybody's going to continue listening to us talking about psychic.
I have to believe we are magic. Shit.
I know. Don't you love this song?
Oh.
All women and all perfectly set to the topics we were talking about.
Thank you. Was that you?
Yes.
Good job, Ma. Girl.
All right, well, it's going to be fun talking to Molly. I can't wait. It's going to be so cool.
That's going to be a laugh riot right there.
All righty. All right, Magic Woman.
Bye, guys.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Bye-bye.